Well, good morning and happy Mother's Day. It is great to be with you today. Thank you for taking this 60 minutes to be with us on Mother's Day. We're happy to have you. I'm happy to have my wife, Hillary, up here with me on this Mother's Day. She is awesome. She kind of sacrifices Mother's Day for the good of all of us. Four services, she doesn't really get a true... It's coming. We do it later. So, but I asked her to be up here with me because we want to pray a blessing, a prayer over all the ladies in the room. We also are very well aware that Mother's Day is not, it's not always a shiny, happy, rainbows and lollipops day for some of us. There's pain. There's pain from past. There's pain because of loss. There's pain because some of us wanted to be mothers and aren't yet, or whatever the case may be. And we want to be sensitive to that and celebrate women in general, because women, you mother, you give us a reflection of the God of the universe that we wouldn't otherwise have, whether you have children of your own or not, whether you have lost a loved one, a mother or not. We see God through you in a way that we otherwise wouldn't see him. And we're grateful for you. We're grateful for how you mother, wherever you are, in whatever way you do. And so I want to ask all women if you would just be willing to stand. And Hillary and I are going to pray for all the women. Go ahead and stand. This Mother's Day, we celebrate with all the women in our midst who dedicate themselves to the ministry of mothering. We say thank you. We ask that the God who designed you and your unspeakably important role to bless you and keep you, to make his face shine upon you, to give you joy and contentment in Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, moms. Thank you, Hill. Love you. If we haven't met, I'm Caleb. I'm one of the pastors here. And we are continuing in a series called Church Detox. And we have been in this series for the past several weeks. If you've missed some of the messages, you can catch up online, subscribe to the podcast, whatever. You don't need to have heard those to understand today, but it might be helpful to catch up when you get the chance. The idea of the Church Detox series is that some of us grew up going to church or grew up avoiding going to church because of bad experiences that we had. That we had these things that framed the way that we looked at church or the way that we looked at God, and they're not altogether helpful. They're not accurate views of God. They're not accurate views of his church, and they taint and they filter and they cause us to see ourselves, God, other people, the church, in a way that is not who God really is. We've said in this series that when it comes to church, when it comes to this life, really, with God, that the main thing is Jesus. Jesus is the main thing. Jesus said that when you look at me, you see God. I am the God of the universe in skin. If you want to know what God is like, you look at Jesus. The main thing that Jesus did was the resurrection. That he came and died for the sins of the world and rose again, offering new life to humanity. He did lots of other cool things and miracles and miraculous things, but the main thing that Jesus did was die and raise from the dead. So if a guy raises from the dead, I listen to what he says. Like, that matters. We talked about last week how we read the Bible because of Jesus and his resurrection. If Jesus didn't raise from the dead, then the Bible has some good things in it, but it's not really all that helpful. But because Jesus rose from the dead, it changes everything. It's a fresh start. It's a new beginning. And these words from the scriptures, they come alive and they mean so much more. We said that these scriptures represent his message of love. He said a lot of things, but they all fall under the banner of love. Love was Jesus' primary message. But then Jesus left. He disappeared, went into heaven. A cloud covered the view of the people that were there, and he was just gone. And when he left, there was no church. There were not gatherings like this. There were just some people looking up into the sky like, now what? But then the scriptures teach us that he breathed his own spirit on his followers, and they became a people following him in this way, a people going in a direction, extending his message into the world. Here's what John 20:22 says. It says that he, Jesus, breathed on them and said, receive the Holy Spirit. which is not unlike the story of how humanity started in the beginning. When God created people out of dust and then he breathed in them. Here's what it says in Genesis. God formed man out of the dirt of the ground and blew in his nostrils the breath of life. Then man came alive, a living soul. I've heard people explain the soul, which is a mysterious thing, but the soul as the breath of God. And if you've never been in church before, if you've never experienced God or you're not sure that you have, you still kind of know that feeling. You still kind of know that there is a spiritual dimension to you, that there's more than just flesh and blood and how you think, that there's a spiritual element. And you've wondered, no doubt, if God has whispered to you at times, drawn you, guided you, and maybe, just maybe, your soul is the very breath of God himself. And so it's as if when Jesus breathes on his disciples, it's as if he's saying, let's start this thing again. This human experiment, let's hit reset. Because now I've died for the sins of the world. Now you can be restored to a relationship with the God of the universe. I'm going to breathe my spirit on you, and we're going to start this humanity thing again in a new way. And my spirit will whisper, my spirit will guide, my spirit will be with you, even though I'm not and I'm going to heaven. And then right away, his followers, they are viewed and known as change makers, difference makers, generous people. In fact, here's a famous little paragraph of how the early followers of Jesus were seen, how they were viewed. Acts chapter 2 says this, "All the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to sharing in meals and to prayer. A deep sense of awe came over them all, and the apostles performed many miraculous signs and wonders. And all the believers met together in one place and shared everything they had. They sold their property and possessions and shared the money with those in need. They worshiped together in the temple each day, met in homes for the Lord's Supper, and shared their meals with great joy and generosity." Did you see that the word shared was used four times? That you could summarize this famous paragraph as saying that early followers of Jesus were marked by joy and generosity that looked a lot like sharing. Sharing meals, sharing stuff, not keeping to myself. They were people who shared because they wanted to pass along this message of love, this generosity of the God that they are now following. Lives marked by generosity. Isn't it interesting that the message of Jesus doesn't change the world? That he decided that he wanted to breathe his message on us, and that it would be us embodying his message of love and generosity that would change the world, that would give people an ongoing glimpse of who this God really is. That means, friends, that he's counting on you and me to be an active participant. That the church is not a spectator sport. He's inviting you to be an active participant in his ongoing message of love and of grace and of generosity. You have a part to play. We have a part to play. He's inviting you to step up your share game, to not be a spectator. And now I'm talking to those of us who are like more of the committed, like been to church a while, like no, we know the deal. I want to encourage you to also not be an idealist in this sense. There are some good people that I know, I've been this way, where they come and they say, you know what? We got to be like the church in Acts. That's, if we could just go back, we need to model and we need to do exactly what they did. And if the church could just be more like that church in Acts, then that's something. That's what we have to get back to. But here's the problem with that. Is that then you leave and you go to church to church trying to find that church in Acts and you're like, you all are terrible. None of you get it. I'm the one who's enlightened and I get it. I need to be my own church. And so you hate the really big church and you start your own church in your home. And then the people that come, you're like, I don't really like any of you. You don't get it either. This is not the perfect church. This is not the main thing. This is not, and you just bounce around because nothing is perfect. By the way, nothing's perfect. If you found a perfect church, don't go. You'd screw it all up. There's not a perfect church. So yes, we read the scriptures, we read the book of Acts, and we let that be an example to us, but we don't idolize it. We're in this time, in this place. And guess what? God's Spirit is still whispering and leading and guiding and inviting you to play an active role and you to play an active role and you to play your part and do your thing and continue to take us in the direction that He is leading. Now, today, in Orange County, California. So I want to tell you two stories this morning. One story from the early church, the book of Acts, and then one story that Jesus told. And in these stories, you're going to see generosity, but you're going to see it in a different kind of way. I'm not talking about money today. I'm actually trying to get at something much, much bigger. So let me give you the context of the first story from Acts chapter 10. There is a Roman centurion, his name is Cornelius, and he's kind of a big deal. If you can imagine like a big, strong, strapping guy. This is a guy who has killed people. This is a guy who's been battle tested. This is a guy who is not to be trifled with. He oversees at least 80, maybe a lot more soldiers that are under his direct leadership and supervision. And Cornelius, this Roman soldier, general, commander type guy, he becomes a follower of Jesus. I don't know if he was there by the cross the day that Jesus died and was like, this is real. Something happened. Something's happened. I don't know when it happened, but he started following Jesus. Still as a Roman, still as a commander in this Roman army that's like the evil empire, but he's still employed by him. He's still leading all these people. He's still carrying out the orders of Caesar, and he's following Jesus. And Cornelius has a dream. He has a vision. And in the vision, he senses God telling him to go find this guy, Peter, who's one of the apostles. He's one of Jesus' kind of inner circle guys. And in the dream, he says, go find this guy. So when he wakes up from the dream, he has one of his employees, three of them actually, as messengers, that go find me this Peter guy. And so they're off to find Peter. That's where we pick up the story, Acts chapter 10. The next day, as Cornelius' messengers were nearing the town where Peter was, Peter went up on the flat roof to pray. By the way, all the houses in those days had flat roofs. They didn't have air conditioning either. It was like being in a beach town. And so they would have, like, one of their living rooms was on their roof. And so they would go up there. Like here, and you go up on the roof, and you get some sun, and you pretend you can see the ocean. You can't see the ocean, but some people can see the ocean. But you know it's there, over there. And so that's what Peter was doing. He goes up on top of the roof to pray. And it says it was noon and he was hungry. But while a meal was being prepared, he fell into a trance, which is a funny thing. You gotta love the Bible. It's like he fell into a trance, like he does. You know, is this a normal thing for Peter? Did Peter trance regularly? Were there other inducing factors that brought upon the trance? We don't know. Verse 11, he saw the sky open in this trance, and something like a large sheet was let down by its four corners. In the sheet were all sorts of animals, reptiles, and birds. Imagine a sheet being held down by its, lowered down by its four corners, and all these animals are inside of it, reptiles and birds. And a voice said to him, get up, Peter, kill and eat them. Which was mind-blowing for Peter, because Peter is a good Jewish boy. And good Jewish boys only eat kosher foods. And so there's all kinds of animals in this sheet, and a voice from heaven is saying, I want you to eat them. And if you're a Jewish person, this freaks you out. And it's really offensive that God himself is telling you this. Because you weren't supposed to eat certain meats. And the Jews added layers of rules on top. And so even if a meat or a food that you could eat touched another meat that you couldn't eat, now it was contaminated. So if chicken is okay, but pig isn't, but the pig touched the chicken, you get the chicken out of here. I can't eat any of it. Like, we go rules on top of rules on top of rules. And so Peter is offended. I can't eat this stuff. I won't do it. Look what he says. No, Lord, Peter declared. I have never eaten anything that our Jewish laws have declared impure or unclean. You can see the kind of the religious framework all in this. I've never done it. That's unclean. That's gross. That doesn't meet the specifications of our religious order. I won't do it. You're crazy. What are you talking about, God? Verse 15, but the voice spoke again. Do not call something unclean if God has made it clean. The same vision was repeated three times. Then the sheet was suddenly pulled up into heaven, and Peter was very perplexed. You imagine the angels that are holding this sheet. They're like, okay, one time. Bro, all right, one more, like, two, three. We're out of here. This guy does not get it. I imagine they go to Jesus and they're like, Jesus, can we find someone else? Peter is dumb as dirt. There's got to be someone else that we could use, which makes me wonder, does Jesus have fun with his angels? Because he could joke with them and be like, bad news is I made all of them of dirt. So you're going to have the same, sorry. Once in a while, afford me a bad pastor joke, okay? Just then, the men sent by Cornelius found Simon's house. Standing outside the gate, they asked if a man named Simon Peter was staying there. Meanwhile, as Peter was puzzling over this vision, the Holy Spirit, remember the Spirit that Jesus breathed on people, the Spirit says to him, three men have come looking for you. Get up, go downstairs, and go with them without hesitation. Don't worry, for I have sent them. This is really important. This is where the rubber meets the road. Because Peter has had this vision, this awakening, and God has been whispering to him, look, I'm making people clean. You've called them unclean, the Gentiles, the outsiders, the people that are different from you, and I'm saying they're clean. Don't call them unclean anymore. And now, even if Peter's trying to get his mind around it, even if you've sat in church before and you've tried to get your mind around grace, okay, I guess if grace is for me, then grace is for everybody. I guess if grace is relevant to me and I've done some bad stuff, then anybody can have access to grace. I get it in my mind, but then there's someone in flesh and blood in front of you. There's a knock at the door and things get real. It's like, okay, now what am I gonna do? God says, don't get hung up on this whole religious order thing. And now there's some outsiders, some Gentiles, some people that don't live as clean as me, and they're knocking at my door. It's like the real thing, real humans on the 405, actual people who swindled you out of business, actual people who hurt you or offended you, who live and believe things different than you, who aren't as clean and neat and tidy, who come from different cultures, or who have baggage from their past. And there they are knocking on the door. People who still wear their red caps. People who voted for her. Muslim people, gay people, fundamentalist people who hate Muslim people and gay people. And Jesus is saying, look, don't call people unclean. Don't call them unclean. I'm giving access to all. And you're like, oh, I kind of get it. And grace is, if I get it, then all right, all right. And then it's in your face. It's an actual human person. What will you do? And Peter told them, you know it is against our laws for a Jewish man like me, like Peter says, to enter a Gentile home. Gentile just means everyone else who's not Jewish. It's a big category. Everyone else. I can't enter your home or associate with you. But it turns out God's just given me a vision. God has shown me that I should no longer think of anyone as impure or unclean. So I came without objection, he says, to which you and I might be like, really, Peter? You came without objection. You just argued with God for the last 20 minutes because you couldn't let go of your religious background and you didn't want to associate with unclean people because you were so committed to this clean way of eating. Oh, and now you just embrace it wholeheartedly. I'm for it. Yeah, I'll go with you. I've always thought this way. No. But isn't that what we do? Once something was just like assumed, and now you look at it and you're like, how could people have thought that way? How could they have, how could, a couple of generations ago, how could they have had segregated churches? How could that have even been, how could people have used this phrase of the Bible to condemn all these people and even kill these people and even and behave this way and that way? Now it just seems so ridiculous, but back then it was just the way it was. But that's what happens. God begins to open people's hearts and minds, and then there's a real live person in front of you. What will you do? I think of my, I have an aunt and an uncle. Fabulous, fabulous aunt and uncle. But when I was a kid, I was around them in Arizona, and I overheard my uncle making some racial remarks. And I thought, I gotta rewind the tape on that. That sounded racist. And so I rewound the tape, and I was like, is there any other way that he could have meant that? Nope, that was racist. My uncle is racist. And so I went to my dad, and I was like, Dad, is this real? Like, that he said this. And he's like, well, yeah, you know, he comes from this background, and his parents were like this. And it just was not on my, I could not get it. I did not understand. My best friend was black. I couldn't understand how someone, especially someone in my family, could think that way just a couple of generations ago. But to their credit, my aunt and my uncle, they actually met my friend Albus, and they loved Albus, and they paid for me and Albus when we were 14 to go to a Phoenix Suns basketball camp in Arizona. And when they dropped us off at the camp, they gave us both like 5 rolls of quarters, which when you're 14 is like the greatest gift. You feel like, I can do anything with 5 rolls of quarters. There's nothing that can't be accomplished with 5 rolls of quarters. And they gave me 5 rolls, and they gave Albus 5 rolls. And it didn't take long before Albus was just part of the family. They just love Albus. But isn't it weird? Like something that was just like, oh no, this is the way things are, and this is the way people are, and this is who's out and who's in. And then all of a sudden you're like, how did we justify that? How did we even think that way? I know it's unimaginable for you too, like it is for me. I know that you're not prejudiced, but no one here. I just still want to just ask you 2 questions, just to poke, prod you a little bit. So consider these 2 questions. Number 1, do you believe that certain kinds of people are unclean or outside of God's grace? Do you believe that certain kinds of people are unclean or outside of God's grace? Maybe in your head, you've been in enough church services, you've heard me talk enough or whatever, in your head you're like, no, I get it. Like if I get grace, then anybody can have grace. But when it's a real person, is there still something in you that goes, I just don't wanna associate, I don't wanna. Second question, do you only hang out with people like you? And I get this, because some of us are like, but I gotta shelter my kids. And this is an issue for me too. I gotta shelter my kids. But here's the deal. When you shelter your kids, you shelter your kids. You know what I mean? And then your kids are gonna grow up, they're gonna grow up thinking that Jesus only cares about people like them. Or that really grace is about, we don't really understand grace. It's just about your performance and being a certain way and looking a certain way and having a certain amount of money and hanging out with the right, clean kinds of people. We accidentally raise kids who don't know how to share. And they don't know how to engage with people who are different than them. And they draw lines instead of crosses, as we've talked about in the past. And they feel entitled to or better than. So here's a big challenge that I have for you to consider on this Mother's Day. Go into a home of someone that's different than you. Or invite someone who's different than you into your home. Because here's the deal. It hits home in the home. Like it gets real when you go into someone's house and you're actually sharing meals and stories and life with people who are different than you, that maybe didn't grow up the same way, that maybe have a different lens through which they look at the world. Invite them into your home. Be willing to go to their home. Moms, you show us the way. ladies, you're better at this than most of us guys. You show us the way. Love, show us that kind of love, the way like you love your kid. It doesn't matter how much bad stuff that your kid does. You're going to welcome them back home when they want to come home. Show us the way. Tolerance isn't enough. Go into the home. Show love. Extend grace. Be generous with your grace. My mom is awesome at this. She always was when we were growing up. She taught my family this by example, and she always had people into our house that, if I'm honest, as a kid, I would consider strange. There were strange humans in our house with regularity, and maybe some random distant cousin who was in the military and who was stuck at a certain military base and couldn't get home for Christmas. So there they are at our house for Christmas. And you're like, seriously, are you going to give them a stocking too, Mom? You know, like that kind of stuff. Or the guy who worked for my dad on Young Life staff and didn't have enough money, didn't have a place to live, so we let him live with us for 6 months, even though he had night terrors, and I thought that I was going to walk into the bathroom and see red rum on the... I thought I was going to die. But welcomed them in. And this manifested itself in many, many ways. There was always someone new in our house, someone different than us, but they felt welcome. So my best friend was black. I have two younger brothers. One of their best friends was Asian. The other best friend was Jewish. All feeling equally welcome and a part of our family. Cool story. My youngest brother, who's really close friend, was Jewish. His name is John Newman Gonchar. And he was just hired as Karch Karai's assistant for the U.S. national volleyball team. I taught him how to play volleyball. And he wasn't very good, but he's a good coach. So now he coaches the best in the world. Let me show you this. This is relevant. I've done this once before, but I think we all need to see it again. So when it comes to religion, and when it comes to faith, and when it comes to this, all these ideas, and what we need a church detox from is the way religious people look at life and faith. Most people in the religious context, and it would have been Peter's context that he was coming out of with the religious framework, a lot of people believe that you're either in or you're out. You're in or you're out. And if you pray the prayer, if you check the box, if you do the thing, if you're born in America and you call yourself a Christian, then you're in. And if you're different or you do bad, like the people, these are the people that are in, and these are the people that I hang out with, and these are the people that are welcome in the church, and then everybody else out here, keep them away from my kids. I don't get it. They vote different than me. They believe different than me. They're not in. They're out. And they probably, the reason why they're out is because they do the big sins. You know, if there's a sin scale from like 1 to 10, they do these sins. Like the people in church, they do these sins, and that's okay. And we don't mind. Like, just keep it to yourself. But the bad people out here, they do these sins. And they should be like arrested and put away and imprisoned. And we can't tolerate that. They're not in. They're out for the bad sins. Right? I mean, didn't you kind of grow up thinking that way? But what if it's not like that at all? What if the truth is that there's no bounded set, as theologians would say? Instead, it's a centered set. And it really, all that matters is, where are you facing? Are you looking at Jesus? Because if you're looking at Jesus, you're in. It doesn't matter how far away you are. It doesn't matter what you've done. Doesn't matter what you haven't done. Doesn't matter what side of the tracks you come from. Doesn't matter the baggage that you bring with you. Because the people out here, they don't behave very well. They're coming out of abuse and all kinds of pain, and their behavior is not super clean. And these people can be offended by the behavior of these people out here. But the question is, are they facing the right direction? Because I know people way in here that are not. And they look clean, and they look put together, and they say the right words and stuff, but they don't really need Jesus because they think that they're good enough on their own, and they're facing that way. And at the same time, this person that's way out here is desperate. They know that they're broken. They know something's wrong with them, and they've turned and they've just said, I need this grace, Jesus, and they're in. That's the reality. And as you read about Jesus, you begin to see that that's the way he talked, that that's the way he views us too. You don't have to earn your way. You can't earn your way. You just look to him and realize that you need his grace and you have it. So I told you that last week we talked about how the Bible, it all just points to Jesus. The Old Testament points to Jesus coming. The New Testament points back to Jesus. It's all about Jesus. So let's read something that Jesus wrote. I'm just going to read this to you. I'm not going to put it on the screen. It's not in your notes. I just want you to sit in and soak in this story, this parable that Jesus told, and see how it relates to the generosity that we're talking about. Jesus said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius, which is a coin that would have been a good day's wage. A good day's wage was a denarius. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into the vineyard. Go to work. About 9 in the morning, he went out and saw others were still standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, hey, you guys go in and work too. I'll pay you whatever is right. And so they went in too at 9 a.m. He went out again at noon and then again at 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. At 5 in the afternoon, he went back out again and he found still more standing around. And he asked them, why have you guys been standing here all day? And they said, because no one hired us, sir. And he said, well, you also go and work in my vineyard. At 5 p.m., they worked an hour. When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call all the workers, pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first. Isn't that beautiful? Give the ones that I hired last, pay them first. I want everyone else to see this. I want everyone else to see what's about to happen. The workers who were hired at about 5 p.m. in the afternoon came and they each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. They're like, hey, did you see how many rolls of quarters that dude got? We're going to get so much more. This is going to be great. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began grumbling against the landowner. These who were hired last, they worked only an hour, they said, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of work in the heat of the day. Isn't that interesting? You have made them equal to us. But he answered one of them, I'm not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for the denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I'm generous? Another way of saying that is, you mad, bro? I gave you what I told you I was going to give you. I mean, you worked. You knew what you were. Why are you mad? Are you mad because I'm generous? Are you mad because I wanted to be generous with these people too? Are you mad because I made them equal to you? Even though they didn't work as long and as hard as you, I'm generous. Celebrate with me that I am generous. I'm a generous God. I'm generous with you. I've been generous with you. I'll be generous with you. There's nothing you can do that gets you outside of my grace or outside of my love, and it's the truth with them too. If they turn at the last minute, if they're way out there, if their life's a mess, but they realize they want to work in my vineyard, if they realize that they need my grace, they're in, just like you, same as you, no exclusions. This is not an exclusive club that you have to wear a special jacket for and learn all the hoops, the hurdles, and the handshakes. Once you turn to me, you're in. I have grace for all. Don't be mad because I'm generous. And in fact, I'm going to breathe my spirit on you, and I want you to embody this message of love and generosity. You take it to the world. You show them what it's like. You be love. You be generosity. Don't worry about what's yours and keeping and comparing. Bring this message of grace and love to everybody because my grace is sufficient for everybody. That's his message. That's his generosity. And his invitation to you is to be generous too. Be generous too. So go into someone's home. Invite yourself over or invite them to yours. Let's be a generous people because our God is generous with us. And moms, you show us the way. Would you stand and respond with us?